Lake Effect continues on WUWM. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. The coronavirus is crippling countries around the world, forcing major cities into lockdown. That has slowed production and put some businesses on hold completely. And with travel restrictions in place, all of this has led to a drop in our air pollution. Experts warn the unintended relief the environment is feeling from the pandemic is only temporary, and it isn't always a good thing. But there are lessons to be learned about how we could give the planet a break on the other side of this. Each month, we have a conversation with UW-Milwaukee professor Paul Rober about the climate. He began his conversation with WUWM's environmental reporter, Susan Bentz, by looking at the similarities between climate change and the coronavirus.
There are some striking parallels between what we're seeing with coronavirus and climate change. And there are also some important differences. But I think we can learn a lot about our ability to adapt to these sorts of challenges by seeing what's happening now and perhaps learning from it. The similarities that I see are challenges like this require prioritized action. And it requires action in advance of the obvious actual threat. An example of that for coronavirus, of course, by the time it reaches a critical stage, it's already infiltrated a large percentage of the population. And so if you just start taking steps at that point, you have a lot less leverage in terms of controlling the outcome. So that's sort of, you know, our classic approach to most problems in the United States is sort of a crisis mode response. And a crisis mode response for things like this that require action in advance is ineffective. It tends to increase the fatal consequences. And climate change similarity there is simply the fact that we understand what's going on. We understand the science. In fact, the science has been understood for a couple hundred years. It's nothing new. What we've been working on from the science point of view is really understanding very important details, what it means at the local scale. The big problem we've understood for a long time. The issue as far as action in advance is that in order to blunt the worst impacts of climate change, you have to start taking action before you see the worst examples of the consequences of it. And so it requires people, you know, plan ahead, think about ways to change things. It also gives you a lot of opportunity, maybe, because since you do have that advance warning, there's the possibility of actually making transitions that are not crisis mode, that are not so abrupt. Unfortunately, we haven't done that. We didn't do it for coronavirus. We saw what was happening in Asia, and we actually didn't put anything in place. In fact, prior to that, we've had warnings from the medical community about our susceptibility to epidemics and pandemics. And instead of putting things in place that we would need for that, we actually defunded a lot of things that were already in place to do these kind of things. So those sorts of things are very similar. There's also another similarity that is a good point, which is to some degree, the worst consequences are reversible, not entirely. Obviously, if you've lost loved ones, people who lose their lives for either this or climate change, you're not going to be able to reverse that. But what will happen for the United States or the world, however bad coronavirus is that people will eventually recover. A certain fraction of the population will have a certain amount of herd immunity, and in that sense, it'll become more like probably the seasonal influenza situations that we run into every year, and where we have some capability of adapting to that. We'll be putting in a lot of adaptation for climate change. We've made the situation much worse than it needed to be, but we will be able to do certain changes to infrastructure that will allow us to accommodate that. So in that sense, we can at least deal with the situation. In other words, neither of these is an existential threat in terms of the future of humanity. Both are very serious, but they're not existential threats. So sometimes you'll hear people will talk about climate change in that sense that, you know, civilization will end, the world will end. That's not true. But it is true that it's a significant and major threat with significant consequences. Another similarity that I see is the politicized response to what is really well-understood natural processes. And the problem with that is the politicized response, nature doesn't care what we say about it. Nature does what nature does. Nature has laws. Nature follows those laws. And we can either do our best to deal with that based on our rather excellent scientific understanding, or we can ignore that and pretend like it's not happening, and then we have to deal with the consequences of that. So that's another similarity. One of the major differences between coronavirus and climate change is the time scale. So for coronavirus, you know, we're talking about weeks to months, potentially a year or two before a vaccine is in place. So relative to climate scale, even though to many people that seems like a really long time when you're dealing with something like this, it's very short. Climate change timescales are decades to centuries. And unfortunately, that also makes it easier to ignore. Climate change is easier to ignore because it lacks some of the immediacy that something like a pandemic has. And so that's a pretty significant difference. Unfortunately, it makes the climate change problem a little bit harder because it's easier to put off. It's easier to not prioritize action when you can put it off that way.
So, Paul, shifting our focus slightly, when you think of the coronavirus, do temperature and humidity impact the outbreak?
So this is an area that people are actively researching now. I just saw a report this morning, actually, about it. There seems to be some indication that there might be an influence, although the jury is still out on that because we're so newly into this situation. We do know that, you know, other illnesses like influenza is seasonal. I'd say from a coronavirus standpoint, probably the most important takeaway is that it might be a moot point this year because we're dealing with the initial big wave of the outbreak. So even if it is damped down somewhat with warmer temperatures in the summer, it's probably not going to be something that will overcome the outbreak. We don't know that that's even the case that will happen. For example, there are some significant warm weather climates which have already experienced pretty substantial effects from coronavirus. So we don't know that this is the case. It might be, and it might help us to some extent, but I'm not sure that it matters that much, really, in terms of the overall action that we have to take against it.
It's hard to think about any sort of silver lining, but because our world has changed so significantly, or activity in the world has changed so significantly, fewer people commuting, air flights being canceled, major events being canceled. So does this global reduction in activity impact climate change?
It's definitely true. We've seen through satellite measurements and other measurements that pollution is much lower in Europe and Asia, and presumably in the United States now too. Air traffic obviously is substantially reduced, and that's been a significant contributor to emissions. So all of those short-term aspects are true. Longer-term, unless we, you know, adapt our economy in ways that don't involve an entire shutdown, it's not going to change the trajectory that we're on as far as climate change. But it does tell us a couple things. We can turn on a dime. We've done that for coronavirus, but not without economic consequence. That's also true for climate change. When we do transition, it's probably going to have some economic consequences. However, because we do have lead time, because the time scale is so much longer for climate change, that provides us the opportunity to adapt by planning ahead and converting to energy sources primarily that are less damaging to the climate. And so we have some time to do that. So it doesn't have to be nearly as consequential as it has been for our initial response to coronavirus. I would also say that another important point about the virus and about climate change is it just demonstrates once again how connected the world actually is. And so you can't just hide away in your little shelter, even as we're doing that right now, to face coronavirus. You can't actually do that and solve problems. You have to understand that the world is connected, nature is connected. Nature doesn't care about our national boundaries, doesn't care about our arguments between countries. It wants it to do what it will do, and it will do that regardless of what we think about it.
So, Paul, as we've talked over the last few months, a good part of your motivation is to better inform people about climate change, with the hopes that that information will mobilize people to realize that their action and their votes have impact. Now we're living through this wave of the coronavirus. Does this reinforce your belief that an informed public can make a difference?
Well, the famous line is elections have consequences. And the only way that we can deal with threats like this, whether it's coronavirus or climate change, is through policies that are informed by good science. And voters, it's really important that voters understand that, not be swayed by political argument, but by understanding what we do understand. We've had investment over many years in building up our scientific understanding and our ability to conduct science. We shouldn't waste that. We should use that productively to understand what the threats are and how to deal with them in the most effective way possible. And so voters don't need to understand all the nuts and bolts of every little detail of the science, but they need to, first of all, trust expertise. Understand that expertise has been developed over a lifetime of study of these issues. And it's not a political issue. It's a scientific issue that people are trying to understand. Where the politics comes in, of course, is in policymaking. And it's important for policymakers to also respect expertise and to understand that the scientists are just trying to communicate as clearly as possible what our understanding is, and to try to help policymakers use that information in the most effective way possible. So I do think that as we see how coronavirus plays out and the different responses to that around the world, there are lots of lessons to be learned about good ways to respond and less good ways to respond. And I think, you know, if we can take something from that for the future, that would be a very valuable thing for us as mankind, as humankind, to understand how to deal with these kinds of things.
Paul Rober is a distinguished professor of atmospheric science at UW-Milwaukee. He spoke with WUWM environmental reporter Susan Benz. Thank you.